Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Hello, Connie. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Yes, yes. I enjoy your joy, Connie.
Oh, thank you.
Always, always. So I was clicking, you know, liking or loving the post, and I do that for all my posts, and somebody once said, "Now, why do you do that? You're like very egotistical, you love all your posts." And the thing is, it's not anything to do with that. A friend once asked me, a couple actually, they said, please like your posts or click on them and like do that, because then it shows up for them that and then they know that I've posted something. So it's like a notification.
That's true.
So it's I do it as a consideration.
Brilliant. That's good.
I was kind of keen to get started with a few more, but doesn't matter. There are more coming. Lots that said they'll come, so we just have to wait a little bit. But I do wanted to ask you, this is for me, Connie, and this is kind of how I'm keen to do the chat too. I mean, you know, I don't want to have it like a preset thing. I really want to know stuff from you. And really what I wanted to ask you was, how did the book come about? What led to the book?
You know, from time to time you'll probably see me go,
no problem.
Heard, and I'll share with you what I'm experiencing and seeing here, because being out in the natural world is really important to me and my how I connect to the divine and how I connect to myself. So about the book, I had been wanting to write a book for many years, actually. I mean, this goes way back to about, I think my daughter was six, so about 8 years ago. I was working on a book and I was really trying to make it happen and, you know, doing the book proposal and trying to get agents and all that. And it just felt at the time like I was trying to force something and it wasn't the right book at the right time. And I'm sure you know about, you know, divine timing. To respect divine timing and spirit will let us know when it's the right thing. So I put it on the shelf for a few years, and then about 3 years ago, I got it off the shelf again. I decided, okay, I'm going to write something different this time. And I had ideas of what I wanted to write, and I started writing chapters for a few months, and it sort of stalled. Kind of went back and forth. I'd write something, and then a few months, nothing would happen. But then it was last summer, I was like, I need to write a book. I actually saw someone give a talk at a local theater. I thought, if she can be doing this, I can be doing this. Write this. And one afternoon, my husband runs in the door to my office at home that I work in, and he said, got to see this. This is for you. It's on right now. And it was an advertisement for this book writing program. And I saw it and I was so moved and I was crying. I felt like, okay, spirit's giving me a message here. And so I signed up.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I took a leap, and it was a lot of money. I mean, this was like a big investment, but I felt like, And this was really true of what happened. It was an initiation into this whole new phase of my life, this new chapter in my life, this new book in my life. And I know to trust those signs when they come. You know, if it spoke to my husband and he felt called, that doesn't happen very much. And say, you have to see this. And then it brought up all of this resonance in me. And also a little bit of fear, which usually I try about that in my book, because my book is about anxiety, right? So that there's a quality of fear when it arises that I know it's telling me you need to do this, because it's indicating that something powerful about to happen, that there's a step into my own power that's about to happen with this. So I took the leap and I did it. And what's interesting is that a new book emerged, a book that I hadn't seen. Because I became aware that so many of my clients and students that I work with, especially here in Silicon Valley, which is a very high-paced, high-pressure place, a lot of people dealing with stress and anxiety. And then, of course, what we're seeing happening in our nation and in the world, there's a lot of stress and anxiety going on. And I thought, oh, I've overcome that in my life. And I continually work with that. It's a human emotion. So it, you know, it does keep arising. And I have this way of working through it that is very effective for me and my clients. And so then the book naturally flowed, and I think it took about 6 weeks to write the manuscript from that point.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty quick. Yeah. I love that the book came about via attunement, you know, to use my language. I can't really do it any other way. That's it. And attunement produces its own timing if we pay attention. That's very powerful.
Absolutely. It's true.
I like that specifically also with a little bit of fear. Because if we approach anything and if we do so with courage, there has to be that little bit of fear. Because if we don't have fear when we're being courageous, then we're just being foolhardy, right?
That's right. That's right. Or not, you know, unconscious. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. So we have to have that. If we're deliberately being courageous, in other words, deliberately expanding our boundaries, stepping outside of ourselves, there has to be that little bit of fear or caution, you know. So it's very powerful. Very
right.
Cool. I love that. The other question. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say then. That brings in the practice of faith and trust that we need to step into something that's a little bit like you said, comfort zone. Wow. That brings up fear, and then we practice faith and trust in that process. It's come to us for a reason.
Wow.
So what do you want to say?
Oh, I was just going to say capital T trust. That's for big deal because, you know, it's not just regular trust, because regular trust, you know, we could engage in trust and just say, oh, well, I'm just going to trust it all works out. And we could be utterly crappy doing that because you don't care. You don't do what you need to do. But capital T trust, you can only engage that when you've been impeccable. You've done everything you can do. And now you say, well, I've done everything that I know to do. I can't do anymore. All that's left that I can do is trust. And that's capital T trust. Hugely profound. Yeah, big deal.
Yeah, as you say that, it brings up for me that there's an investment. When we do a capital T trust, we're investing our attention, our awareness, our heart, and moving into that with all of ourselves, not just like you say, kind of casually trusting and then kind of sitting back and whatever, you know, that's Wow. not the practice of spiritual trust.
No. And it's an investment of intent. Specifically,
yes.
Not just intention, because intention is kind of pre when you sort of just thinking about it, almost in that wish stage. But intent is when you've committed to that action and it's now I'm doing it. You know, that's the intent. You're putting an energy and a commitment to it, right?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, there's the noun intention and then there's the verb of I intend. And I think what you're saying for me is that they need to go together. You don't just have to.
Right.
But then don't intend to follow through and move into that with your energy. You know?
Right. And once you've made that shift from intention and through doing what you intend through that application, intention becomes intent. And they are slightly different. Yeah, it's a subtle thing, but they are different.
Go.
Yeah, right. Intent is a power, in other words. It's an activity.
It
it's ongoing. It's both verb and noun. So it's very, very, very exciting, very powerful.
It, you know, it reminds me of, there is a Sanskrit phrase.
I like these.
Lakshya Bodha, LakShyaBodha. And it means the constant intent upon the spiritual goal, which ultimately would be for awakening or enlightenment or you know, however you want to put that. But it's a very firm kind of resolve and intent that is consistent. And we're always applying our energy and our focus and our intent on that ultimate goal. And so everything else serves that. And we're doing everything else with the intention of that Lakshya Bodha.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Constance, will you do me a big favor? Will you type it in the chat if you can?
Can I do that?
You should be able to do that.
I think I can. Okay.
Bye. The reason I'm so keen is because Bina and I spent all day yesterday, pretty much, or it seems like all day, but we had a takeaway session on precisely Lakshya Bodha, precisely that, which in the way the language we use is focus of purpose and clarity of intent. And the two go together. We clarify our intent, and that leads to a focus of purpose. And that's Lakshya Bodha, if I understand it correctly, right?
Yes.
There yes. you go. There you go. Right.
Constant. So. I love to bring in Sanskrit.
I love it.
Sanskrit is it's one of my passions. I teach it to yoga teachers.
Oh, wow.
And I use a lot of Sanskrit words, and I use them in the book too. So I refer to philosophy to help support some of the keys that I talk about in the book. And I love it because, well, first of all, Sanskrit is an energetic language. And so when you're using the word in Sanskrit, it's carrying the whole spiritual energy of that meaning, and you don't even need to know the meaning to have that energy of the word. We don't really have that in English. I mean, you can say the word peace, but you associate that with the meaning of peace, and the word itself doesn't really necessarily contain the vibration of that. But
why?
Is because it's something that activates our energy centers in our body, and it's also, you can encapsulate a lot in a Sanskrit word that doesn't have associations with anything else in your life.
Yes.
So I could say, I could say that constant intent on the spiritual goal, but to say Lakshya Bodha, you encapsulate that in this beautiful word that has all the energy.
It's not just a word, it's a conception. It's slightly different.
Mm.
And that Sanskrit is a language of conception, right?
Yes.
It's an abstract language. And for us, we one of the specific things that we do, and you know, it's part of what we were doing yesterday with Bina, and what we do, what I do with the people that I interact with, is we, and part of the course is to construct your own dictionary of power. And that dictionary of power is precisely conceptions like Lakshya Bodha. Yes, we make them in English, but for instance, the way we would translate Lakshya Bodha, although I didn't know of the term before that, but our version of that is focus of power and clarity of intent. And we spell them, you know, we hyphenate them so that they become a singular term, not three words. And that makes it into that conception, an abstract conception and interactivity, which it's an apex conception, and everything, there's this huge underlying pyramid, the same way with Lakshya Bodha. So it's a mnemonic device really for engaging and opening up the mind and the brain and the connectivity, right?
Yes. Totally makes sense to me.
Right. And to me, from my understanding of Sanskrit, that is kind of how that language came about. It's really a top-down language as opposed to, you know, other languages which start with describing the world around you, you know, detail stuff, tree and chair and whatever. But Sanskrit is starting with abstract, and it's founded on that or centers around or became that, you know, all that abstractness and those conceptions. Very powerful. It's awesome.
Well, there's a beautiful story actually about how Sanskrit came about.
Ah, brilliant, brilliant.
Sanskrit was actually discovered or revealed. So the tale goes that the ancient rishis or seers, the sages that were going into deep, deep states of meditation, discovered the seven energy centers in the body, the seven main chakras. And as they went deeper into meditation, they noticed that each of these chakras had a certain number of quote unquote petals. They looked like petals on a flower.
Wow.
And each of the petals vibrated to one of the sounds in the Sanskrit language. And so it was discovered through deep inner meditation, that this language existed in the universe and in our vibrational and energetic field. So I think that's really exciting. You know, it's not just something that humans sat down and said, okay, we're going to have A and B. And, you know, it's something that came to them in deep inner states.
Wow, that's awesome. So it's a language of revelation.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm having a little bit of fun because it was a big part of our conversation, revelation specifically, as it applies. So that's why I'm just throwing it in there, just for the continuity and the attunement of it. You know, it's a focused term for Bina specifically.
I'm not surprised there's in the city going on here with what you were talking about yesterday.
Right. It's just brilliant. I just love how that works. It's just so awesome. It's like you get really into something and then you get this confirmation the next day or, you know, after that, not necessarily the next day, you know, following that. It's fantastic. But I don't want to forget, actually, the question that I had earlier was with your book, though, you were saying, yes, the book is about anxiety, but that's not exactly accurate if I understand it fully and from my reading of it, because it's about spirituality and its connection to anxiety, right?
Absolutely. So in a number of different ways. So in that sometimes on the spiritual path, we actually perpetuate some of that stress and anxiety through how we do our spiritual practices, number one. Number two is that the anxiety always has a message. And this is true of any emotion. So anger always has a message. Depression always has a message. Fear always has, you know, any emotion has a message for us if we're paying attention and listening to that message. And then thirdly, that I definitely have experienced in my life that anxiety, stress, fear, overwhelm are all part of my spiritual awakening. And when I embrace them that way, it's very, very powerful. So the book addresses all three of those aspects of anxiety connected to our spirituality.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And you know, I made a note in the comments there. I'm going to do that because as you talk, so much comes up, and rather than me, you know, I'd rather just type it. So there, in other words, what you're saying in my understanding, I'm just doing a takeaway repeat back for you of how I see that is that you're saying that in anxiety and stress and worry and similar related things, there are capital G gifts, as we call them, involved. Gifts of learning, gifts of awareness, gifts of extending yourself, gifts of growth. Right? In the anxiety itself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've experienced that with, you know, the more I practice that in my life with everything that comes into my life, like welcoming it in, the more I, like this grace, I would maybe call it grace, divine grace.
Yes, grace, yes.
That I'm following and staying and riding in the flow rather than resisting it or fighting it or fearing it or being angry about it or being impatient with it or anything. There's a divine flow happening, and it's a very beautiful way to. Does it help facilitate my own spiritual awareness and awakening?
Yes, oh, I love grace. I love grace, and for me, grace, it's so much more. I don't see grace as a religious concept. Yes, it is that as well. But for me, grace, the way I relate to it. It's so much more, it's, you know, not necessarily connected to religion at all. It's just, it's a profoundness of life and a way of being. And, grace is something else. It is truly transcendent. You know, and as Biela likes to say, grace is a wonder, magic, and mystery all its own.
Oh, that is so true. That just, those words from Biela, that really resonates for me because it's not about it's not about a religion at all. It's not about a god or a goddess. It's about that divine flow when we're like, you used the word attunement earlier, right? When we're really attuned, and I like the word alignment, alignment with that divine essence that is in everything, that is everywhere present, that is all that is in the universe. Then grace starts to naturally flow, and it's just every day is amazing and infinite possibilities.
Yes, yes. Grace to me is also a power, and that's pretty profound. That when we see grace as a power, and I don't mean when I say power here, I mean energy. That's a purposeful, directed, useful energy, not just a general energy. So that's why I mean power. So when we have actual usefulness and value that we can direct the energy, we can deliberately use that energy, that makes it power. And grace is such a particular energy and such a particular power. And of course, like all true powers, they never really ours.
Oh, right. Right. It's from not our personal power, you know, our personal power.
Exactly.
That's personal like power. Battery. Got a limitation, and then if you use your personal power, you're going to you can use it up and then feel kind of depleted. And so that's a practice that I'm always incorporating, is reminding myself, oh yeah, tap into the infinite source and let that energy flow through me. And then it's effortless to teach a workshop, it's effortless to do a Facebook Live, it's, you know, it's effortless to be with my clients, because I'm not doing it from my own personal energy. I don't know about you, still, you probably experience the same thing, but whenever Like I put the me aside, the me, the I, and myself aside, and I just let the openness come for that energy, and it flows. It's pretty effortless, and it's usually my best work.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And that's why I say grace is just such a profound power. And when you connect to it in that way, yes, it's not yours. Grace becomes the sublime way of being, a more of being, which is just unbelievable. It's just magical. So yeah, grace is something huge. When we did the workshop, you know, one of the plus 10 was to always strive for grace. You know, it's not something that I don't know. I would hope that at some point one can have it to be a perpetual in our lives, but I think grace is one of those mores, a capital M more, that there's always more of it. And if you do attain grace, there will always be more of it. So
I was going to say, it's interesting that you use the word strive for grace, because my experience is that it's not something that you can actually strive for. You can actually make happen, but I think what you're referring to is that, there goes a hummingbird.
Brilliant, brilliant.
That's beautiful. Right. As I'm talking about this, that was awesome.
Yeah, they are grace.
We can continually cultivate our attunement, our alignment, and our receptivity to that coming through us, and that will allow it to flow. But we it's not something we can control or force or make happen. It's,
exactly.
It's continual practice of attunement, alignment, and receptivity.
Right. Yes, definitely. It's a tuning into grace rather than a striving for grace. Yes, that was just more to set a sort of an aspiration to say, I will always.
Yeah,
exactly. I will always, instead of strive, to a better term would be, I will always make the effort to connect to grace, be aware of grace, attuned to grace, aligned to grace when it comes my way. So, yeah.
Oh, I think you're talking again about intent.
Exactly. You set the intent. You set the intent to connect to grace, to have grace within you. Yes, absolutely. I've got a nice little quote for grace as well, which I'll just put in there. And so just for grace, when I get a bit carried away with grace, it's like a love child almost, you know, the concept of grace. So yeah, it's just something else. So. And you know, it's to get to that state of grace, it's very akin to pure joy, which to me it's a state of freedom. It's when we truly really experiencing like capital J joy, absolute pure joy, we are being utterly ourselves. We are completely free in those moments. So joy to me is an ultimate accomplishment, because it's a representation of pure freedom of self.
That's beautiful. And what that touches in me, freedom, what is true freedom? And you're talking about this joy kind of just flowing through. And a lot of people, and this is something I talk about in the book, that a lot of times we think that freedom means we have control, that we can control everything, make everything happen, and make it all perfect and make it all exactly the way we want. But actually, the experience of real freedom is the complete releasing of that and allowing something greater to flow through me and to order my life. You know, I think that the infinite, the divine presence probably has a much better idea of how my life can go than I do, with my own limited ideas. And freedom to be able to let go and allow the divine to guide and lead my life. That's great freedom. Then I can just be in the flow and express and follow that lead. It's joyful, and it's so much more ease in my body. There's so much less stress and anxiety, because that stress and anxiety is usually caused by trying to hold on and cling to the way we think it should be, make things happen the way we think they should happen.
Exactly. And control is a limitation. Whenever we think of control, we essentially are focusing, or not focusing, but segmenting our attention and our awareness on precisely what the control is. And of course, when we assume that control is where we're at, we also, by implication, are saying to ourselves, well, I know what's right in terms of what the control needs to be. So I have this knowing of what's right and what's appropriate, etc. And that is just, it's a hubris beyond belief, because of course we're knuckleheads compared to the universe, and we're always going to be nincompoops relative to the universe. So anytime we exercise control, nincompoopery is a profound power term. It goes in the dictionary of power. Yes, nincompoopery absolutely belongs in there. it's a magical word. But yeah, so when we exercise control, we're also saying that I think I know. And that's just, you lost before you started. And that's the magic of attunement. With living in attunement, we say, well, wait a second, I don't know. I cannot possibly know all that the universe is. So how can I truly, truly trust my decisions? And I don't mean decisions in the short term, like deciding to get from here to the kitchen. I know I'm going to be okay in that. I mean life decisions. So the overall, the big picture. In that context, I know my decisions are likely to be flawed, right? So I say, well, if I know that I'm likely going to be wrong because I'm a nincompoop relative to the universe, relative to the entirety of the overview perspective, I say, well, I have to find some other way to make my decisions. And I do that via attunement. That's what attunement is to me. It's connecting to something outside of myself in order to make decisions. And that is the general attunement of things. Yeah.
Yes, I'm completely in alignment with that. And why? I love talking about, you said like knowing is very limiting. It's extremely limiting. There's actually such a beauty about not knowing, about embracing the mystery and embracing the unknown. I mean, honestly, life and spirituality is a paradox in that at the same time, we need to own what we know, we need to own what we don't know, or own the unknown. I guess, you know, own is the right word, but like embrace the unknown, as you were saying, allow it to direct and guide your bigger choices and decisions. So certainly we need to embrace that we know, okay, I know how to drive a car, and embrace like what I know about driving a car. But in the bigger picture, like always embracing the mystery and the unknown, and that opens up to so much more than like, oh, I'm stuck. I'm fixed on what I know and wanting to stay in what I know and always wanting to know.
Right. And when we make that shift, use the key word. And it's just such a powerful, magical word. And I wanna type it here because what happened to my comments here now? I don't know what happened. I can't comment. I wanted to just type capital M more. Because, you know, that unknown, when we shift to seeing the unknown, to seeing the unknown, that what we do not know as more, as magical, more, then there's always more, because there's an infinity of unknown. But we don't want to say there's an infinity of unknown because, well, it's like, but when we say, oh, there's an infinity of more out there and there's always more. Wow. Now suddenly I've just transformed my entire world into being awesome and magical and fantastic and just fabulous, right?
Yeah. A lot of people can get freaked out about, you know, the infinity of all that is. But if we really think about it, I mean, we're living with that every day. But what we do to deal with maybe our fear about all that unknown is we just keep ourselves in this limited scope of what we want to see and perceive. And so when we can embrace the fear and a little bit of anxiety about, oh my gosh, there's so much more outside of my sphere, and look at that as, you know, you're ready to be initiated into a more, into the capital M more.
Exactly.
Then the unknown becomes exciting, a joyful revelation in every moment. It becomes beauty beyond what you've noticed before, what you've seen before, because in every moment now you're seeing more beauty, more possibility. And that there's more within us, that we're not limited by who we think we are. There's so much to be revealed, and it's okay to not know what is within us. And in that not knowing, then we open to far more than what we've allowed ourselves to be. I can't hear you now. I wonder what happened.
Oh, I muted myself so that I could just listen because I wanted to listen. I forgot to do that earlier. just what you were saying, there's always more. That's just the magic of it. And then you discover more, and then there's more beyond the more, because more is the connection to the incredible, magical, divine infinity of everything. And there's always more. It's just profound. It's like a real, just a total shift of everything. And the profound shift was, instead of going into the unknown with trepidation and anxiety and a bit of stress and worry, and we start to go into the unknown with adventure, right? And excitement and anticipation. Now that is not, we're not going into the unknown anymore. We're going into the more. Now it becomes this joyful, sublime, profound experience that's just beyond anything. And now we're eager for the more, and that is truly, truly transformative, because of course, you know, everything that happens around us, it's all about how we describe our world and what we expect. And when we expect the more, of course, we bring that more into it to connect back to intent again, right? So it's a very big shift.
Yes. The profound. I want to say hi to Lorianne. I noticed that Lorianne has joined us here.
Oh, brilliant. Hi. Yes, yes. Hi, Lorianne.
And enjoying meeting. I'm enjoying reading her comments as well as Vina's. So, yes, it's great that you're trusting the feelings and the unknown. That's beautiful. I mean, that's the practice. And as you're talking about more, and I'm sitting outside here, I mean, one of the ways that I practice tapping into that capital M more that is infinitely expanding is when I'm outside in nature, and I explore a lot of deep nature connection workshops and retreats. I study with an organization called Eight Shields as one of my own spiritual practices. And just sitting outside, there is so much more in every moment that I can notice and be aware of. You know, even with just the birds themselves, for example, I can be, you know, listening to what sounds are close to me or seeing, well, what bird might be near me right now. And then I expand my hearing out a bit and I notice, well, what birds am I hearing, you know, within, you know, a couple houses of me? Oh, okay. So there's a bird over there and a couple back there. And then I can expand my hearing even farther. Like, what's the farthest I can hear? And there's always more for me to discover. And I can even do that with this little patch of ground beneath me. I'm sitting on clover. I have clover in my backyard, which I love.
I love that.
That's my garden. And just like noticing all the details of the clover itself, and then, oh, there's little animals that are living in here, there's little insects. And like, it's just, if we walk through life like this, there's so much to explore. And to me, that opens me up to so much more to connect to, so much more feeling a part of the whole universe by seeing how much aliveness and beauty there is happening around me in every moment.
That's the magic. There's always more. And then we can see even in the most trivial, the mundane things, as we like to say in the perspective shifting workshop, the sublime is but a perspective shift away from the mundane.
Absolutely.
It's so huge to me that. So there's always more in anything. All we need to do is wave that magic wand of perspective shifting, and then suddenly the mundane is no longer the mundane. It's the sublime. Because we can also not only see like in the insects or the clover, we can see the abstract in that. We can see, hey, wow, you know, that year, exactly. We have so much that we can pull from that. It can be this profound expansion of our awareness. It can be something that intimately connects to what we need right then in terms of learning, in terms of developing and enhancing our awareness. And now it becomes a more on top of a more, and it just, yeah, there's always more. It's incredible.
That's absolutely true. And that reminds me of this morning, and I posted this on my Awakening Self page on Facebook there. I do a little practice most mornings called Sit Spot, where I sit out, usually in the front yard. I'm in the backyard right now, to be present with everything that is. And I connected in particular to this butterfly bush. It's a really, I planted them there because I love them so much. They have these long cones of teeny tiny little flowers all in this long cone. It's a deep purple, and they have this amazing scent that I love. And so I connected very deeply to the bush today, and I asked me, what message do you have for me today? What wisdom would you like to share? And it reflected to me to be my own divine self, to let that shine and radiate, and then let, just like that butterfly bush, it is just being itself and sharing its beautiful flowers, and then it allows the butterflies and the bees to come to it. They will show up. They'll be naturally attracted to that. And so when I'm being that divine self that I am and letting that radiate, and when you are, and when, you know, when Bina and Lorianne are, and anyone else watching and listening, when we're being our true divine essence and allowing that to radiate from us, then what we need shows up. The people show up. Abundance shows up in our life by us, like I'm going back to alignment, attunement, intent, letting that flow. So that's what I got from the plant today, the butterfly bush.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And that is exactly, just to me, that is such a just brilliant, marvelous, awesome exemplification of there's always more, because there is, it's just always more. I never get enough of it. That's what I love so much. It's just never enough of it. It's just so incredible to me, that always more. I just wanted to say something about the comments real quick to those making comments. There is a time delay from when you make the comment to when we see it. It's about 2 minutes. So if we don't respond, you know, it's just they are behind the curve, as it were.
I'm not ignoring you.
No, not at all. At some point in the future, because we'll do definitely more of these chats. Today, we just kind of, you know, chatting on whatever as it comes. And that's the magic of these chats. They just happen. But, you know, there might come in the time in the future we'll have chats about specific topics. And then we might even invite people in on Zoom where they can comment in real time, and we can chat about the comments specifically, make it more interactive. Right, Constance? Yes.
Absolutely.
That would be brilliant fun. I did want to just jump a little bit, since we're using attunement and alignment, the two words a lot. When for us, those terms are much more than what they would mean just in the regular context. There's quite a bit more to them, right? So for me, I just want to kind of enlarge upon them a little bit in the way, at least for me specifically, how when I use attunement, like how I think of it. And I have a nice little analogy, which is like the surfers. When they paddle out beyond the waves and they sit in there waiting for the swells, you'll see them kind of paddle this way and then they'll paddle the other way. They're positioning themselves. And that's what they're doing is attunement. Because really what they're doing is they're looking for the swells that are coming, and they're looking at where that swell is going to break. So they're looking ahead and they're attuning to the world, to their universe. Now their universe right at that moment happens to be the sea and the swell and the ocean and all that, and the wind and the currents and everything. So, but they're attuning. So then through that attunement, which is a positioning, really, they find the appropriate spot to be in, which now produces the timing and or makes the timing more appropriate. And it also is for opportunity. And that spot that they're attuning to, it allows them to align to where the wave breaks. And that's alignment. It's when you take advantage of what's come your way through attunement, what you've now put yourself in a position to take advantage of, to utilize, to incorporate, to embrace, to embody, etc. That's alignment. It is using what you've attuned to. So the two are connected, but slightly different, right? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I love the metaphor that you use for that too, because I live like, you know, I'm about 45 minutes from Santa Cruz, where there's a lot.
Right.
And watching them, you can really a lot about, I mean, first of all, you have to put yourself in the water, right?
Exactly.
So we need to listen to the ocean of the divine, right? The divine, right? And that's a little bit of a risk, right? And you have to learn the skill of how to get into the water and how to be able to swim and all that. So you have all of those skills that take you to that point of now tuning and aligning with the swells coming in, so that I can ride the waves that are already flowing to me. So that's, you know, for us to remember, you know, especially feeling like stuck or quote unquote bored, is that there are swells always approaching us. And when we can be attuned like that to the energetic feeling of a swell coming, and I often can sense that coming, that, okay, there's a change coming in life. I'm going to line myself up for that, you know, with my surfboard to catch that wave and see where it's taking me. Exactly. And it's exciting. It's like, I mean, it's a lot of fun, actually.
Oh, it's brilliant. And, you know, I love this analogy because, excuse me, well, there are a couple of other, you know, as you know, we have that A+ philosophy and we love the A terms. So, you know, appropriateness, awareness, attunement, alignment, all of these. But it brings in two other really cool A terms. And one is anticipation and the other one is availability. So we have to make ourselves available to the magic. It's so important. So availability is a very powerful A term. Now, plus that surfing analogy, what are they attuning to? The swell. But what is the swell really in the abstract? Or literally, actually, the swells are energy. That's what a swell is. It's just energy. So attunement is about positioning ourselves to be in the appropriate place to make use of energy. And then it becomes power, because otherwise it's just energy on its own. So we can then empower ourselves by aligning with energy. We make use of it. It becomes functional, practical, because if it's not practical, you know, without application, as we love to say, it's all meaningless, right? So there's a lot of analogies that goes into this, because we can't really surf on dry land. There's no energy there. So in the same way with life, the energy is not always there. We have to position ourselves and we have to anticipate also, which is to prepare. You want to put on your wetsuit or put on your sunscreen or, you know, get your surfboard, all the stuff, you know. So, yeah. And then you have to apply discernment. You don't want to go out and, you know, just surf in a place that you've never surfed before. You don't know where the currents are, all the stuff. Right. There's that practicalness to it as well. And there's this element of strategy involved. You know, so it's just a magical analogy. So, yeah, you have to pay attention to what's going on. So, big deal. Another item.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we could do a whole Facebook Live on the analogy of the surfers.
Yeah, well, it's nice. I like it because it's just so magical. And there's a more to that analogy that really carries over. You know, we want to surf life, really, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And isn't all the gifts of more? Every time we get this gift of more, that's like that wave that we're riding. And, you know, some of those waves we can pretty much ride forever, you know, and just the wave of more is one such wave.
Yeah, it also brings up, you know, the metaphor of a stream or a river, right? And so it's a lot easier, obviously, to get in your boat and ride downstream and go with the flow. But a lot of times, we're stuck on something in the past or something we think we should have, or resisting how it is now, or resisting where that energy is taking us. And we're trying to swim upstream and it's exhausting and it's discouraging because the flow is going, no, you need to go that way. Right. And so if we just to attune, just in a word.
Right. Exactly.
Attune ourselves to where is that flow carrying us? So sometimes it's carrying us in a direction that we don't think in the moment we really like. I have an example of that currently in my life that back in the beginning of March. So it's to give you a little preface, I have had a beautiful little counseling office for myself for 7 years, and I decorated it just exactly the way I wanted it. I had it feng shui'd all wonderfully for the energy. And every day I came into that office, I felt so much gratitude for having it. And at the beginning of March, I got a notice from the owners of the building that they wanted us all out and that they were going to gut the top floor, which was where my office and a couple other therapists and people that I had, gut it all. And they're going to, like, you know, raise the rent and sell it to someone here in Silicon Valley, lease it to them. And at first, it naturally brought up grief. You know, this has been my special sacred place, and it's been a sacred place for my clients, and I don't want to lose this. But right as I felt that, I also reminded myself, okay, wow, this came out of left field. I didn't see this coming. Spirit has something in mind for me here. And one of the things is Spirit is having me let go of my attachment to that, because I'm going to be doing a lot more teaching, a lot more online work, and I don't need to be attached to an office place for that. So, you know, with the book coming out and everything, right, I feel the wave of this energy coming and moving me in this more expansive direction And so now I've embraced it. I'm subletting a couple offices to see my clients in, but that to let go of my attachment to that, because I'm going to be doing more of this kind of work.
Wow, wow, wow. I love that. I love that. That's just magical. I mean, that's just a really excellent exemplification and articulation of attunement and alignment. You know, yes, we say, but hang on, you know, that stuff came at you, you know, the change of office.
Right.
So you say, right. Well, you couldn't really attune to it ahead of time, but you attune to it in the moment, right?
Yes, and accepting that that's what the universe is bringing me right now. So right. Even though this isn't what I would have asked for, this wasn't what I wanted, but there's a purpose for this. And yeah. If I drop into alignment with that purpose and flow, and I still let myself grieve, I still let myself go through the of letting go of that office. It doesn't mean I don't do that, wow. But that I recognize, okay, this is, the universe is saying, turn right, you know, go this direction now. Wow. Go with that, because I've found that in the past that fighting and resisting doesn't do anything. It just depletes my energy, increases my fear, and it cuts off my alignment and my flow.
Why? And to just go the little bit extra more with this, the moreness of this for me is that we have to insist on extracting the more, mm-hmm. which is what you did in that instance. You had something come at you, and instead of saying, oh, well, this is terrible, you said, no, I'm going to insist on extracting the more. And how profound was that? Now, instead of this becoming a disruption, it became a gift. Right?
Absolutely. Yes, it's a commitment. It's a commitment to I'm living my life committed to embracing the flow and the more.
Exactly. 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 And to extracting the more, not just letting it come at us and waiting around, you know, passively. We're saying, oh, I'm going to be active in this. I'm actually going to look for the more, which is, that's a whole different deal. Yeah. And extract it from everything. And it's there. We can pull it from anything, all the time.
Yes. That extraction, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. You and know,
It's like a distillation process, you know, where we're given something and then, you know, distilling out the impurities and leaves us with the gifts, right? The gems that are.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. To insist on it as well. That's another. Yeah. So it's to insist on extracting the more. It's that mindset of insistence that we're going to extract it. Now, well, that's a profound more involved in that again on top of what more already, because what we're doing is we're leveraging our personal responsibility, which means like, wow, now I'm taking responsibility for saying that there is more. And I'm going to insist on it, and I'm going to instruct on it. In other words, if I do not connect to more, it's on me. That's pretty huge.
It is. I am getting a message that my battery is running low.
All right. Well, that's all good. So that's pretty good. So that's a natural timing mechanism for us. Look, we're coming up right.
Exactly.
So it's quite brilliant. It was so funny. The same thing happened with a chat yesterday with Bina, and I said, yeah, don't get your power cord, you know, because it was 2 hours, which was kind of neat. I prefer the 2 to 1, but either way, it's good. So, it's brilliant.
Right. Hi, Vanessa and Mark, you're with us, and whoever else is with us.
Yes, yes.
My computer goes.
It's pretty brilliant. That insisting on the more, I just wanted to say that, you know, when we shift to that accepting responsibility for extracting the more and insisting on extracting the more, that's such a profound life shift, because now we shift from living where things come at us to where we go to things. In other words, we now embark upon deliberate living. And that's a whole other deal. That's a whole moreness of being right there, right? To live deliberately.
And to me, that's another spiritual paradox. As we're both surrendering to the divine flow and then intending to ride it like a surfer.
Exactly.
Embracing both, letting go and being deliberate and intentional.
Exactly. And that is because we are doing what's appropriate. That's the key term. And when you think of that surfer analogy, they are positioning themselves and to the energy. They can only position relative to the energy coming at them, to the swells, which is being appropriate. Then when they see where the swell is going to break and it's the right type of wave. You can't catch every wave. You know, if you're a surfer, right. You know that you're going to get dumped. And yeah, I know. So it's the appropriate energy that we have to align to. And that's the key. I think Constance's battery just died. But yeah, to finish my point, though, it's about appropriateness. This whole entire spirituality, it's all about appropriateness and that connection to it. So yeah, surf life, Lorraine. That's it. That's it. Is it Lorraine or Lorianne? I'm not sure. But either way, it's a cool name. So yeah, I suspect Constance's battery died because she's gone off the screen for me and I can't see her anymore. Yeah. I wanted to just add one thing because it will just tie up everything. When for me at least, when we say spirit or the universe, by implication, and I'm fairly sure that this it's in some way is similar for Constance. But for me, when I'm saying that, to me, when I say the universe or spirit, I'm also saying that's me. It's not the me that you see here now and that I think of myself also, but it's like a greater me. So really, when I'm getting through attunement, when I'm getting, say, some pressure from the universe, some kind of a guidance or whatever, I'm really getting that from myself, from my deeper self, from my intimate self, from my spiritual self. And that's by implication there. It's clumsy in language in general to say, you know, I got this message from myself. It doesn't quite work as well when you say, oh, you know, I got some guidance from spirit or I got some guidance from the universe or, you know, but when there's that understanding that actually that's me, my deeper subconscious, greater, awesome self, the self I'm looking to connect to. And that's the entire path of attunement and aligning to all the energies is to get to precisely that point where we connect to that universe, which is also us. So, yeah. Brilliant, brilliant. Oh, okay, Constance, brilliant. Ah, I see your picture. So brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Extension cord. Oh, suddenly I'm assuming you're inside now. Ah, your sound. You got to unmute yourself, Constance.
There you go.
Yeah, I think it by default is your mute is on when you join. So.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I'm inside. So you got to get to see my little indoor.
Brilliant, 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 brilliant. That's nice. Yeah, I unfortunately don't have a pretty background behind me. That's why I put the image instead of the background. It's just a green screen behind me from when I made some videos. So. But I do like the image though, so it works pretty good. Constance, I was just saying something and I'll reiterate because it's a really profound point. It's like the encapsulation of everything that we said, or at least a consequence of it. Is that for me, especially, and I suspect it pretty much also applies to you. When we say spirit or we say the universe, there's an implication in there that, or an understanding that spirit or universe also means us in terms of like the greater us, the extended us, the subconscious us, the deep us, our deep self, that fullness, that magical greater us that we are looking to connect to. And this is our spiritual journey, is to get closer and closer to the spirit, which is us, or to the universe, which is really us. And eventually they just become one. So they seem to be separate, but not really. It's only a matter of perception and consciousness and awareness. And that is the entire process of attunement. It's getting to that process where the spirit or spirit, universe, us, this conscious us, our segmented us, if you want to call that, becomes one with the greater us, and it's all joined together. So it's when we say spirit or the universe brings something to us, it really is ourselves bringing something to us. That's why it's so profound and awesome, because it's always intimately, exactly, and precisely appropriate to what we need and what we really want. Yeah?
Absolutely. And that's... The thing that helps me remember that is that us or that me is not the idea we have of ourselves. That's this, you know, ego personality in a body and all that. The true I, you know, the true I, or as my friend Denzel likes to say, is this word for I instead of this word for I. But the true I is not any of those ideas or definitions that we have of ourselves. It is, like you're saying, it's the one consciousness. It's the infinite. It is
exactly,
yeah. It's universe and all, right. And the source of all of that.
Right. It's like we're a segment of the universe, or we're a segment of spirit, or a segment of God that is looking to become conscious of itself, to be deliberately conscious in full awareness of itself. And instead of just being this generalized unawareness, in not unaware in the sense of being oblivious, but as like a subconscious awareness, it is not that specific, deliberate consciousness to it. And that, to me, as I see it, is the path and the process, and just what we're about when it comes to our life path. And not just us specifically, I mean everybody. It just, you know, not everybody realizes that that's what's going on. But if we think of things that way, then all of life kind of starts to make sense, that we're looking to be consciously, deliberately aware of precisely that fullness, that more that we actually are. It's just a huge deal. You just brought it out from me to explain this because of all the things you were saying. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. pretty awesome. So we are the ocean, really, you know.
When we are. Surfing. We're both the drop in the ocean itself. And
exactly.
We're both.
Exactly. Exactly.
We are right. All of that. And that, like you said, that one specific segment, or I like to say it is, you know, that there is the diamond of all that is, or the gem of all that is, and we're each a facet that reflects something different, because all the facets are facing in all directions, right?
Yes.
So we're reflecting what aspect of the divine we're here to bring.
Yes, yes. Well, you're the diamond, I'm the velvet. I always say that when I'm with Olivia, I say, geez, you're the diamond, I'm the velvet. So.
And they're both important, right? Without the velvet, you
Exactly. So yeah, we all have our function, right? We just have to know exactly where you fit into the scheme of things. Very important.
Right.
That's very useful, right. Very appropriate. Brilliant, brilliant. Mm-hmm. I want to read Lorraine's comment. It's hard to accept it too because of ego. I know my ego gets a little cranky and doesn't want to be an us sometimes. Yeah, because us has hurt me so much in the past. And then I go for a run and go howl with the yotes. I like that, with the yotes. And God out mm-hmm. in the lavender twilight of some evening. Word. That's very poetic, Laurie. And that's brilliant. I love that. Yes.
That's beautiful.
That's most beautiful. Yeah. I never heard to them being referred to as yotes. I like that. I'm going to adopt that term from now on. That's pretty cool. Yeah. We have the yotes around us here. Yeah.
Yes. And Vanessa has commented something. This world changes so fast, which does not support easement. My first response to a sudden shift is fear. It's normal. It's what most of us do, right? Once I reflect and communicate my fears, then I have room to shift my perspective, how I change my perspective. Yes, exactly. Like you love to talk about self perspective shifting. Beautiful.
Yes. I'm not seeing Vanessa's comment yet. That's brilliant that you're seeing them. I'm assuming it's still coming for me, but EOTs. That's really cool, Vanessa. That's really excellent. Yeah, I was really pleased to see everybody joining too. That's really awesome. That's fantastic. It's so incredible when we just make this shifting. You know, perspective shifting is such a magic. We can just in an instant transform our entire world just through waving that magic wand of perspective shifting. It's so incredible. And it's a skill that we can develop. We can literally train our brain to do that. To expand on that for one extra little thing is that, if we make just one habit change to not, when we perspective shift, to not just shift to one different perspective, but to make the habit then to shift to a few more and always look for multiple right. perspectives, that's when we truly get that skill of perspective shifting. I love it. That's just awesome. Yeah.
I'm with you. It's like, how many different ways can I perceive this situation? Because a lot of times fixed and stuck in one way of seeing a situation. Like I could have looked at my, you know, losing my office as, oh, this is terrible and awful. What am I going to do? Rent is so expensive here. And, you know, I mean, I had some thoughts like that, right? But I was able to shift my perspective there and look at it from many different points of view. Like, oh, well, this is going to be good for the people that lease the building to the office to me. Maybe that's going to bless them in some way. It's going to bless someone else that's going to come into this space. It's going to give me an opportunity to be free of having to, you know, be responsible for all of my rent in my space by subletting from someone else. I'm going to connect to new therapists and other people by being in a new space. Maybe because I shifted to the next town over from my office,
I'll have a whole new set of possible clients that can come to me. There's so many different ways, or maybe, you know, now having my, this is the, some of the stuff I had in my office here in my home. Now I can do my videos right here at home in front of my beautiful tapestry on my favorite purple couch. You know, so there's just so many ways that I could see blessings coming from this rather than the original one, which Vanessa, I think, was talking about, or was it Lorianne, or both of them, the fear that usually comes up first. Mm. Is the indication something powerful is happening. And then now, how many different perspectives can I explore about this that are reveal more and more about what this opportunity is and what this blessing is?
It's unbelievable. It's really so brilliant. And to put that into context, so we often experience let's say disruptions in our lives, and I'm saying disruptions very tentatively here now, because when we first experience them, we see them as disruptions or problems or whatever. But through perspective shifting, we come to think and look at those things, and we extract them more and we find them more. But I want to comment on kind of how the mechanism works from the overview perspective in the abstract. If we look at life just in general, as this process of learning, as the process of developing and enhancing awareness, we have to realize at some point, or acknowledge and say, you know what, my awareness is it's limited. It's got this range to it in terms of where I'm at, you know, like a bubble around me. So within the confines of what I know, that's the known, right? However, learning by definition is what's outside of my bubble, which is thus the unknown. Now, if I'm actively learning, how do I connect to what I need to know, which is outside of myself, which is the unknown, in other words? I can't deliberately just go there because, well, if I don't know where I'm going, you know, the unknown's a big place. I can go in any direction whatsoever. Therefore, that those pressures, that those disruptions, those seeming cockeyednesses in our lives, that's precisely the universe spirit, in other words, us as well. It's bringing into our lives the unknown, which is, hey, wait a second. If I, you know, when I think about, well, isn't that now what I need in my life in terms of extending my learning? It's that unknown I need to learn. It's now come into my life. And it's like, wow, brilliant. Well, okay, magical. How awesome is that? It's just now transforms everything. So whenever we encounter this, the unknown or disruption or problem or whatever, it's really what it is. It's what we need to learn, bringing itself into our lives. And of course, when we make that shift to insisting on extracting the more, well, then we just pull all the magic that we need out of it and life is easy. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of, but you know, it really is eventually. It really is.
Well, and even when it isn't easy, it's easier by having that perspective shifting, you know, that we can embrace the challenge and the difficulties, because sometimes life is harder than other times, right? It's not like every piece of cake, but that we learn to, like some of the waves, right? Some of the waves are really hard to ride or really rough or really big.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
We learn to ride those and embrace them as it is.
Vanessa brings up a really powerful point. I don't know if this was the point you were reading earlier, but it is pertinent again to what we're talking about now. She says, expanding to multiple perspectives can be overwhelming. Yes, absolutely. It definitely can be. And then it says, then how do we select in the fast-paced world? So, yes, when we look at multiple perspectives, it can only be overwhelming, really, if we get immersed in that overwhelm. But if we say, hey, you know what? There are multiple perspectives. It doesn't mean all of them are right, all of them are appropriate. It simply gives us a choice to from which to select. So now we say, how do we select and how do we choose? And our focus, our intent is to choose what's most appropriate. They say, well, how do we do that? Ah, that's where attunement comes into it. When we connect to attunement truly and to appropriateness, you know instinctively and automatically, like when you're out there and you're surfing, it doesn't take much to know when a wave is catchable or not. You know, yes, you're going to be some that might be on the cusp. If you're not sure, well, leave it alone. You don't have to take it. So there's going to be choices in those options, in those perspectives, which are simply just obvious and which are good. And this is the magic of it. When it comes to surfing life, we're using a surfing analogy from earlier, Vanessa, in terms of attunement, but because it's riding the energy of life. When it comes to choosing a wave, there's not one specific wave that's appropriate to surf. Anyone will do as long as it conforms to more or less what you want. So we have, out of that overwhelming choice, or apparently overwhelming choice of multiple perspectives, pick whichever works for you. And that's the end of it. Doesn't really matter.
It's true. It's true. And you can... I just got a little distracted because I lost the connection to, I've got to put this off.
All right, no problem. We'll wait for you.
I'm getting sound from, I was trying to respond actually, but someone joined us and it got messed up.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Somebody joined us in, the sound. Right.
Yeah, I tried to respond to someone in the chat and it messed things up. So
about choosing
perspective. So we don't, you know, it's not necessary for us to feel like, oh, I've got to embrace, embody all of the perspectives. I think that in input to, I think Vanessa's question, I think that when we are committed to alignment and attunement and discernment, we'll be able to discern what perspective or perspectives might be helpful to me right now.
Yes.
That spirit is calling me to do, because it's really not necessary to like embrace all the perspectives, and that would be really overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
And some are helpful, like you say, appropriateness. Like with some of them, like I could take in that perspective, but that's probably not going to be appropriate or helpful to me.
Wow.
But being aligned and attuned to the divine or to the universe, to that flow of energy, then we can discern. Okay, it'll come for me. It kind of comes to me when I have that intent, back to the Lakshya Bodha, the constant intent and the goal, that perspectives will emerge that are helpful to me and for my consideration. And then I can consider, okay, that one's helpful. Oh, that one, great to know, may not be so helpful. And then we refine ourselves that way and work with the perspectives that are assisting us.
Exactly. And when it comes to choice from those perspectives, one way, one profound technique that's really awesome and helpful when it comes to choosing which perspective we want to go with, because there might be many that are appropriate, we can go with resonance. Look at the different ones and say, what resonates with me?
I love that word.
Yes, me too. Resonance is incredibly powerful.
Yes.
However, note of caution. Or at least I'll put a little asterisk to it. The resonance can be tricky because we can also resonate with our indulgences and say, well, okay, you know, that's no good. So we have to resonate and bring the concept of impeccability to bear. So when it resonates and we're being impeccable, there's your choice right there. When you can say with honesty that, hey, I'm making this choice because it's sensible, because it's good, because it's right, because I think it's right. Not right according to anybody else, me. I feel right about it. I can justify this choice. I'm willing to stand by this choice. I'm willing to back it up. And then you know you've made a choice which really resonates with your deep heart and you're being impeccable at the same token. There you go. Life is easy. Slam dunk choice. Not a problem. Very simple.
That's a great discernment that you just brought up there, because sometimes we can get pulled back into things that resonate with, you know, our old habits or our unhealthy patterns, right? But then when we get a sense from our practice, from meditation, from awareness, from impeccability, all that, when we get a sense of what our true self is, our essence, I call it our essence, our divine nature, whatever you want to call that. And we feel the vibration of that. So with working with the word resonance, because with resonance, with sound, right, it's like a violin, it's the other instruments are tuning to the resonance of that sound. So when we get a sense of our vibrational energy, when it's in its true and highest self, then we'll be able to pick up the other vibrational energies and feel, does it resonate? Does it vibrate with this? Is there a harmony? Is there a disharmony? And then we can really have that clarity and that discernment.
Exactly, exactly. And the key is to, when you feel that resonance, it's to connect and fine tune and connect and feel that rightness of things. Now, when I say rightness here, I mean rightness according to you, to your own deep, impeccable heart and your conscience. That is where you want to resonate. When you know deep inside yourself, this is right. I don't care what anybody says. Don't care whether the whole world might say the opposite. This is right for me, and I'm willing to stand by this. Ultimately, when we truly live this way in every activity, when we're impeccable all the time, we live in such a way that we're happy to die because of any decision we make. Now, that sounds cockeyed when I say it that way. I mean it in the sense that if I make a decision based on that rightness and it leads to my death, I say, well, so be it, tough piece. That's just the fate of things. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to be unhappy. I'm not going to miserable. No, at the time, I felt it was right and good, and I'm willing to stand by it. Mm-hmm. And that is truly resonance and impeccability. So anytime you need to make a profound choice like that, think of it that way. Leverage your death, not in a morbid way, but in a powerful, positive way, and say, hey, if this leads to my death, am I going to be okay with that? When you really make true decisions, really powerful decisions, and they truly resonate and you make them impeccably, never a problem. You say, yeah, so be it. That's going to be too bad.
Right. That's like using death as an advisor, right?
Exactly. 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 Or to leverage death. Either way, it's very powerful because we don't tend to think of it that way. But when we think of life decisions that way, oh, man, it's transformative. Because now you're saying, yes, you know what? I can't be crappy in this decision. I can't do it for ego reasons or self-importance reasons, self-promotion reasons. Well, if it should lead to that, then I'm going to regret my decision. However, if I make this decision in the fullness of myself, in my full earnestness, in my full powerful sobriety, in my own full sensibility, and my full deep inner desires of profound choices of being more, the choices of grace, the choices of responsibility, the choices of growing my awareness, man, now this is a transformative decision. Because I say, well, if that's where it leads to, too bad. I'm willing to stake everything I have on my decision. That makes decision making absolutely easy. And then, you know, once you've made it, you can go on your way free of worry and anxiety because you've now made a profound decision which resonates with your inner rightness, and you have no concerns, no worries, no problems.
Well, to sort of turn that on its head a little bit, so with the using your death, leveraging your death in a sense, in your decisions. For me, it's life. Actually, it's that I want to choose, not so that like, okay, if I die from this, I don't care. It's more that I want to choose this because this is what brings life. This choice is what brings joy and more, that capital M more, and more life. Right. And so I don't know when death is going to come. I only know that I want to live to my fullest in this moment. Yes. I want to live in my greatest joy or my greatest clarity, or my greatest truth. Bye. And therefore I want to commit to life in this moment, right? I want to commit to, I am fully committing to life, and that I don't know how long I have, right? So it is implying that death will be around the corner, but that this brings in a joyousness that I see out in nature, like everything nature is fully committed to this moment and to living this moment as much as every bird and plant and everything that I can see. And that's sort of the way that I would say it, which is sort of like the paradoxical same way that you're saying it.
it's exactly the same thing.
Right.
Oh, exactly. You just perspective shifted on it. It is precisely the same thing. We didn't say anything different. All that I was doing was simply, you know, because people struggle to make decisions. And in that context that Vanessa put it, you know, using death for some is very powerful as a leverage. Now, for others like you, using life as the leverage, it's equally powerful. We can use both. Why not? There's always more. You know, so I love it. I love it. And we were talking about, we're talking about perspective shifting. So what you did was just a fantastic exemplification, again, example of perspective shifting, the magic of it. So yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Yeah. So in other words, really to put both of them together, right, Constance, what we're doing is we're finding something to leverage ourselves in order to take that whichever choice there. We're looking at all the choices and say, which of these choices leverages me? Which of these choices expands me? Which of these choices connect me to more? Which takes me further? So it's the same thing, whether you use death or life or anything else, really, you know, you could use your passion. Same thing. Leverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love leverage. Leverage is just magical. It's like self-perspective, you know, perspective shifting. It's leveraging our awareness. It's leveraging our attention. So yeah, self-leverage in particular, it's just a really, really, it's one of those power conceptions. It's really awesome. I'm curious what self-leverage would be in Sanskrit.
I don't know. That's a complicated English phrase, so I don't know.
Right, yeah. But it's a conception, you know, of using what else, using the more, in other words. And, you know, much of religion, it's about self-leverage, really. So I'm sure there must be a Sanskrit conception that's similar to
there it. Must be
yeah.
somewhere that's something similar.
Right. Using something external to bring into us what we would not otherwise have had, right? Taking us beyond
that's
and outside,
right.
Extending ourselves. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the concept.
Well, this has been so joyful for me still. I can't believe it's been like an hour and 23 minutes and I'm like, wow, we could do this all day.
I know.
I'm also getting the waves of energy from my stomach going, it's time for
brilliant. Yeah. I ate like literally a few minutes before I came on. I was just like, I finished eating and then I came on. I was anticipating that. I always get hungry during these things because we use up so much energy.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much going on. So yeah, I do think it's a good time to call it since the stomach is calling. Appropriateness and attunement, and we'll align to it. There you go. Very simple.
So I wanted to, you know, shout out to everybody who came. Thank you so much. It's been interacting with you guys, and the comments and questions you shared were fantastic. So looking forward to seeing you all more.
And I wanted to add for those watching it later, because you know you were saying, oh, it's Doug now. Mm-hmm. Hey, Doug. But for those joining, you know, watching the replay later, please, if you have questions or comments, put them in anyway. We will respond to those also, you know, later on in the comments. Absolutely. So
that's right.
Yeah, it's awesome. A little fun thing with Doug over here. I said I almost unfriended Doug because of his last name. Because whenever I type in Biela Noble, you know, I put it at the end of a quote and I hit enter, then it changes it to Biela Doug Noble, you know, because it does that tagging. So I nearly said to him, oh man, you know, I had to learn to put, you know, just get out of that habit of typing Biela Noble, enter. So every time I had to go back and edit it. So it's just fun. Whenever I see him, I think of that. So, hey, hi, Doug.
I've had that same tagging problem on Facebook as well.
Right. But, you know, I share so many quotes from Biela because she's so powerful for me. So I just tease Doug because he's the only one I know that has that last name. Only friend that I have that. So. Brilliant. Doug, you came just in time for us to say goodbye. So sorry, man, but you know, you just watch the replay. It's probably better. You can just start all over again from that. But again, I just want to you know, make that point. So anybody watching the replay, please comment. I love the comments and I'm very keen to go through them. They are really a big deal for me. They mean a lot. So they're awesome. And for you too as well, right, Connie?
Oh, absolutely. I'll look forward to reading all your comments and connecting with you afterwards too.
Brilliant. And there will be more.
Yes, definitely.
We'll do this again. There will be more. There will be lots more. Yeah. And, you know, at some point, like I said, we'll do it we'll share the Zoom link and anybody can join on Zoom and we can answer the questions in real time. And, you know, we'll do that as well. So yeah, there's lots more coming. More.
Well, much love to you, Syl and Olivia and everyone in the Saucy community.
Too. Yes.
Many, many blessings. I look forward to being with you again.
Thank you, Constance. All right. End meeting. Bye-bye. End meeting for all. Yes.